I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Wednesday, November 18th. That means two things. One, we are 8 days away from Thanksgiving football, which is usually great, but it's two NFC East teams in Houston and Detroit early on. But yeah, we'll watch anyway. It'll be exciting. And more importantly, two, it's a Brady Quinn football show!
I think your reaction to the sound is actually better than mine.
My son, by the way, loves these, the reggae air horns.
Like how do you not? I mean, yeah,
he hears a play. He's like, play it again, dad. Play it again.
Like, play it again. Do it again, dad. Do it again, dad.
One more time. I'm like, hey, yeah. That's enough. That's seven times, pal. What's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited for today's show because, we can talk about some kind of like interesting stuff in regards to the Saints. Like I think, when you look at what's occurred this past week to Drew Brees, and as more news comes out about his injury, it does not look good. Like I think based on what's being reported, there's a chance he misses at least three games, maybe four games.
Oh, I think it's more than that. Are they people trying to say 1 to 2 weeks? I don't buy that.
No, people are saying like, you know, 3 weeks, then he'll be back. And I'm just like, I don't know. I think it'll be probably, you know, four plus. I'm kind of with you in that part of it.
Well, let's get into it. So the reports, I think Ed Warder of ESPN has sort of been at the forefront of reporting these specific.
Is he like in the medical rooms? Is he like in the x-ray rooms for all these reports? Cause I feel like he's getting all this information out almost immediately after Drew Brees is coming out of the x-ray room.
Like he's got, yeah, it is pretty fast. It's gotta be
he's got like a lab coat on and he's like taking it. He puts back on the mustache. He has a mustache, right?
Yeah,
like, exactly. Most people, they put on a mustache as a disguise, but he actually puts like skin over top to cover it.
That's great. No, you can see Ed Warder, you can see is like pretending to be a lab technician. He's like, Dr.
What do you got here?
Dr. Berger, just wondering what the case with the Breeze situation was in the ribs. Oh, yes, indeed. Just 1 second. I need to not tweet that out. Maybe he knows the Saints team doctors or something like that. That would be my guess.
Yeah, of course. He knows someone. I mean, clearly, Maybe he knows the garbage guy who's throwing out the x-rays. I don't know. I mean, however it's working.
But it's weird because usually you can kind of pinpoint. I mean, you're not supposed to source guess. As a media member, would you guys source guess as players?
Yeah, of course. We'd be like, oh yeah, she wrote that or he wrote that because they spoke to someone. Like we saw that happen or we've seen them having beers or we witnessed something else.
Or it's like Coach X, you know, it's like when something comes out on a certain team, you know
that coach is close to this person. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Right. Yeah. And there's always plenty of that. Anyway, let's get back on track. So the Drew Brees injury. It is multiple fractured ribs on each side,
right,
and a partially collapsed lung.
Like, yeah,
that's. I mean, if that happens to me, I'm in the hospital for a few weeks.
Yeah, I know. It sounds incredibly significant and severe, and I'm not sure. You can obviously see why he didn't come back into the game. There's a lot that makes sense there. The fact that he went into the game though with the whole fractured ribs and all that was reported. I mean, I've been through torn cartilage, bruised ribs. Maybe there's a micro fracture. Who knows? You know, you just try to play through the best you can. I used to get shots of Novocaine directly into that spot of my ribs that hurt. And used to take a nice little painkiller cocktail think it was a combination of Vicodin, Flexeril, and Indocin. So I think I had an anti-inflammatory, a muscle relaxer, and a painkiller. So imagine taking those. Exactly. You have a little cocktail of those and a little glass of wine or a beer. You're pretty good at that point.
Christmas tree.
Well, the problem was like I couldn't sleep because I can't sleep on my back. I would try to sleep on my side, but then it would hurt because of the way, you know, gravity was pushing down. You obviously can't sleep on that side where you've got that issue. So it became very difficult to find a way to sleep. So you just put yourself into a drug-induced coma, basically. That's how you get through the night. But the reality is it would have been really hard for him to play through it. And so I came out, even going into the game in the first place. Like, I wonder how much they contemplated, you know, having Jameis Winston ready or Taysom Hill ready to go take over with that sort of injury. And it's going to be a while before it gets better. I swear to you to this day, like I still feel like when I twist and turn certain ways, like there is something going on in my ribs that like never really fully healed. So,
I mean, ribs are not, you know, not a soft tissue that can quickly repair itself. They are bones. And so like your protective rib cage, I mean, they're, it's a pretty important part of the body. Like it's not designed to be broken. And
well, and because of the throwing motion, the torque, and really because of the way you breathe, right? Like they're constantly in motion. So they're expanding and collapsing back and forth. So it makes it hard for them to ever be in a state where they can just be at rest and be able to heal kind of motionless like that.
I would assume that reportedly the rib injury before the game is on one side, not both sides. You have to assume if he's right-handed, it's on the left side.
I mean, mine was on the right side. Either way, it's still going to impact you. No matter.
Either way, your torque is you're driving.
You're twisting back this way, the torque back through forward. I mean, you know, you're really going to be using both sides. So it doesn't matter which side it's on. You're going to be impacted one way or another. I promise you, if it's a rib injury.
All right. Well, so let's say that he's out 4 to 6 weeks. That feels like a reasonable timeline, right?
Let's say 5, because that's what they went through last year, right?
Let's split the difference. What is the Saints? See, I think this is fascinating because when Drew Brees went out last year and with that fractured thumb, Teddy Bridgewater comes in and the Saints won all 5 games. They went on the road and won 2 straight games. He was lost against the Rams, and then they went straight to Seattle without ever coming back to New Orleans. They beat the Seahawks in Seattle, very impressive win. But the way that Sean Payton approached the offensive attack was to really, really be conservative with Teddy Bridgewater. And now this is how Teddy Bridgewater operates. He doesn't throw down the field a ton.
Right.
He was dinking and dunking, and it was a conservative passing attack. They leaned on a defense that was emerging as one of the league's best. They let Alvin Kamara do Alvin Kamara things, and you just sort of feed Michael Thomas in the short passing game. Jameis Winston is not Teddy Bridgewater.
No.
He is a very, very different quarterback. Do you think that they will have a similar offensive approach to last year, or they hashtag let Jameis cook?
I think it'll be a similar offensive approach to last year. I mean, you go back to Jameis Winston's college days. It's not like he was necessarily throwing bombs down the field all day. You know, I mean, we tend to forget. I mean, look, he was playing in a Bruce Arians system last year. He's typically been able to throw the football down the field because he's got a strong arm. But I think he can work within the confines of the offense. I mean, just the small sample size we had last week, him stepping in replace of Brees. I mean, I think it'll be more the same. It's still going to be a ball control offense. They're going to ask him to take care of the football, be accurate in the short intermediate throws, and he can take off and use his legs and athleticism. I think that's more of like the wild card of this is twofold. One, Winston will probably hold on the football a little bit longer than Brees did. And then two, he's more athletic. And so there might be times where he takes off, uses his legs to scramble to either run for a touchdown, pick up a first down, or just try to make something out of nothing. And that's going to be very different than I think what you're accustomed to seeing with Drew, where he is anticipating the throw, getting the ball out quick, and really not electing to take off unless he absolutely has to. So that's going to be one of the biggest differences. You know, to think that this team is going to turn into, hey, we're going to chunk it down the field a bunch to Emmanuel Sanders or Michael Thomas or whoever else we, you know, think Harris who has speed, Traquan Smith. I mean, I don't know that I foresee them necessarily doing that. I do think it's in his DNA. And I think Jameis Winston, they'll build in some of those shots and they'll give him some of those opportunities. But, you know, it really comes down to how Sean Payton feels about this. Like, does he feel comfortable, putting his team now in that sort of position where they're doing something different than what they've been doing and what's been successful for the Saints this year to put them in the position that they're in? I think that's one of the bigger questions. And then obviously, has Jameis Winston taken care of some of his issues with taking care of the football. And I think that's going to be the other thing that, you know, is going to potentially put a lot of strain on the defense if he starts throwing the football a ton.
Well, and what makes that interesting, your point about that, is it's not even that the Saints have been doing this for this year. Like, this has just been a thing.
It's been an offense the last 5 years.
Yeah. And I sort of wonder, I mean, because it's easy to say, if it was just the last 2 years, it's like, well, Drew Brees is washed. He can't throw downfield anymore. But he still takes some shots occasionally. Now, they don't look as crisp as they used to a few years ago. But I sort of think that they might do what they've been doing with – I agree with you. I think they might – I don't think they're going to change the offense a whole lot. I think they'll take maybe more shots downfield. But Jameis's thing, I don't know that he's a great downfield passer. I think he's a great downfield thrower. And I think he can throw the ball as far as he needs to. But I don't know that he's ever exhibited just an incredible amount of downfield touch and accuracy the way like a Patrick Mahomes, and I know that's a tough comparison, Patrick Mahomes or even Andrew Luck, you know, Peyton Manning. I mean, you know, I just don't know that he had, and I'm not saying he can't get better. And I think spending of whatever we got this offseason plus 10 weeks with Sean Payton and practicing with the Saints and, you know, all the coaches there will drastically help him. But I don't know. Like, I don't know that we just think of Jameis as like YOLO at deep. And I don't know that he's really, like, I think he can be good without that.
No, he definitely can. Like I said, I mean, again, it wasn't like they're airing it out all the time in college and in Jimbo Fisher's system. And he ran more of a pro style system with some of the things he was asking to do and how he'd read things out. Yeah. You know, they had your, you know, traditional triangle reads or your drive or shallow cross concepts where you're reading the flat, you're reading the basic, you're reading, you know, to your running back in some sort of outlet capacity. So they've had the variety of reads within a system that he's played in before. It's been a while since he's been asked to do that. And then you go back through his years of coaches that have been there when he got there, whether it was Dirk Cutter, but before obviously Bruce Arians took over as the head coach. I mean, those guys like to freaking throw the football down the field. So he was kind of put in a different position. And I think he looks at it as he's got a strong arm. He's willing to do so. He had Mike Evans. He had Chris Godwin. So why not? You know, why not take a shot and opportunity to utilize the guys you have? But, again, I don't think that's going to be their offense necessarily. I think the biggest thing is, look, can he keep himself from making the dumb decisions? Like, there was times where you'd see him make a dumb decision, poor throw. And there's other times where you'd see him make an unbelievable throw downfield. It's the consistency of good decision making that is required, I think, to operate within this offense. Cause if he can do that and if he can get Alvin Kamara the football, and Michael Thomas the football, and then take care of the football and do enough that way, the defense, the whole of the team should be able to win the majority of the games in Drew Brees' absence.
I agree with you completely. Now, and worth noting, Falcons twice, Broncos once, and the Eagles in the 4-game stretch.
The Falcons isn't a gimme, though. I mean,
no. But I mean, the Atlanta's not locking down Jameis, like. Yeah.
Their defense has been better and they've been bringing a lot more pressure, more variety of coverages and blitzes. Like I could see that game being a lot more problematic than people want to give it credit. I could see them splitting with Atlanta. I'll put it that way.
I think that's reasonable. I think it's insane for anybody to suggest that they'll go 5-0 or like 4-0 or 5-0 again. Yeah. Now, I think what's interesting about the schedule though is that, December 20th, which would be the fifth game for Drew Brees to miss, you know who they play?
Who is that?
Kansas City Chiefs.
Whew.
I think I am firmly entrenched in the belief that last year with Teddy Bridgewater 5-0 and a bad Arizona Cardinals team on the horizon, even I think it was before the bye, like right before the bye, that Drew Brees was like, nah, I'm good. I'm coming back. Teddy ain't going 6-0. I'm ready to play and then I'll win and I got the bye week. I can throw against this team. And then I have no problem with that. That's a competitive nature. It's why Drew Brees has succeeded the way he has, but I don't think he was willing to let Teddy go 6-0 and let the should Teddy start the rest of the season chatter pop up, even though it would have been insane.
I mean, I think there was some of that chatter. It was insane. But yeah, no, I mean, it all depends on how fast he can heal. I mean, this isn't something that.
This is different than the thumb too, I think.
Yeah, this is different than that. It's a hard area to be able to accelerate the recovery process too. You know, like I said, you can't really give the area much rest. So
I mean, he just posted a picture on Instagram or Twitter of like he's with his kids and he's got one of the breathing things. He's having to do like he's basically having to prop his lung back up.
Yeah.
You can't rest that, man. Like get your lung right.
And that's why it's gonna be interesting to see when he gets back and when he tries to kind of well, when he can even kind of put his foot on the gas or accelerate as far as his recovery process. Like, that's the other question. All this is, at what point can you start kind of push yourself and testing yourself to see what it's going to be like once you go back out there?
Okay. I have two more questions related to the Saints and then we'll get to a break. And I just realized this one. I think this one's kind of interesting, actually, from an actionable betting standpoint, which is what we like to bring to our listeners. Right now, the NFC South odds, the Falcons and the Panthers are both 140-1 to win. You probably don't want to bet on that. The Saints are -238 and the Buccaneers are +162.
I'll take the Bucs.
I'm on a Saints ticket already preseason at like -160 and I almost bet the Bucs before I was thinking about betting the Bucs. I think now with Breeze hurt in the Bucs at +160, it'd be foolish not to take a bite out of that, right?
You got to hedge. I mean, you should hedge at least at this point. I mean, it makes sense. It sets up for them to kind of sneak in somehow, even though they've struggled against them head to head play. But, you have to. If you don't, you're doing an injustice to your family and future generations within the Brinson family.
I hope that it's not that big a bet that it deeply affects my ability to do whatever. I mean, the Buccaneers are a half game back.
Right.
And as we point out, the Falcons are not a good team.
If you're still trying to convince yourself to lay that bet, I don't know what I can tell you now to help you. Like, you should be rushing to get it at that number before it goes down anymore. Because I do think, like, all those odds will be much more even, and you're not going to be able to get that sort of value with the Bucs. You better go lay that bet.
So the Buccaneers have, I agree with you. I'm just trying to walk through our listeners. The Buccaneers have, the Rams on Monday night at home. And then the Chiefs. Whew, that's tough. But then they have Vikings, Falcons, Lions, Falcons. So, I mean, I would think they split.
By the way, you've got LA coming across the country, right?
Yeah, both those games are at home. I would think they split worse. Well,
and then what happened the last time they came to the state of Florida?
They laid a huge egg.
Yeah.
Against somebody. Oh, the Dolphins. Oh, yeah. In Tampa. This is a Mons Venus special for some of those Rams.
Well, here's the problem. Here's my theory on that, by the way, okay? I travel from Florida to the state of California. Mm-hmm. And there's some drastic differences, okay? I've called games in both. Called game in Miami. Called a game most recently in L.A., UCLA Cal. I mean, It's a different world out there, Will. I mean, you are shut down. You're quarantined if you step in the foot or you step foot in the state of California. When you're in Florida, you can go out to eat. You can do all kinds of different things. Look, they're taking the proper precautions and safety precautions, but they're still keeping their economy open. I just think that maybe these LA guys came out and they're like, you know what? We're going to enjoy ourselves. You know, we've earned this. You know, we've been good. Let's go have a nice dinner. Let's go see kind of what's out and about around town. And I think they've realized, like, this is what they're missing out on. Cause when they go back to the state of California, they're going to be locked down. So maybe that's why they've struggled coming to the West Coast this year or coming to the East Coast this year.
I agree with you completely. I love that theory when you floated it on CBS Sports HQ. I was sort of looking down confused. William Hill doesn't even have NFC South odds up right now, which is very surprising to me. Yep. I almost think that maybe my local's making a mistake here and I think you're right. I need to pounce on this.
Got That's it. Why I'm telling you to go as fast as you can to place that bet. It's going to change. I'm telling you, those odds are going to even out, especially with mustache or no mustache, Ed Warder, depending on his disguise, what his reporting is going to be. The more we find out about how long he's going to be out, the worse those odds are going to get, at least for you, if you're looking for value. So you need to stop doing this podcast go lay that bet right now.
Let me ask you this. If somebody doesn't have a bet right now and they can find those same odds, you're taking Tampa anyway, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. I'm making sure, and this is good. Brady's really into this gambling stuff. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I try to be. I have to be.
Yeah. It's the new,
I've been told by Port we have to be. So we've had to adapt. We got to adapt.
You're very enthusiastic about it. I like it.
And, well, the problem is I grew up in the Midwest. So I was very sheltered, and it's, like my mom, first time I ever went out to Vegas, and she's like, did you gamble? And I was like, well, yeah, mom, we played some blackjack. I think I, rolled some, we did some craps, did some roulette. She just shook her head. She's like, I'm so disappointed in you. I mean, it was like,
wow.
I was like, wow. Okay. That made her disappointed of all the things I've done in my life. So
I think my parents thought that like fantasy football is gambling for a while. They're like, I mean, is this okay? I was like,
is it not?
Well, it probably is. Yeah.
I mean,
the NFL didn't want it to be. The NFL had to stay. They'd be like, nah, this is fine.
Did they not want it to be now though?
Yeah, it's a little more skill related, I think.
Yeah,
I agree. It probably is. Okay, so my last question to you about the Saints stuff: is there a chance that can Jameis Winston secure a long term deal with New Orleans as a result of this next five games? I mean, is that in play?
I mean, don't you think that was a little conversation of bringing Jameis Winston to New Orleans in the first place?
I think Sean Payton was like, "Yo, man, look, you need Sean Payton rehab, bro. Do you see what Teddy Bridgewater got?
Did you see them dance in the locker room together this past week? Yeah. I mean, you didn't see Sean Payton dance in the locker room with other players? I mean, clearly they have similar dance moves. I mean,
Jamming
I'm just saying.
Like, down his mouth.
Yeah, they're both eating dubs. I mean, all I'm saying is that was the conversation going into the scenario. I can promise you that. Like from being a free agent quarterback, talking with teams, prospective teams, you talk about, you know, either going in as a backup or what the opportunity may be. That is exactly what is pitched and sold to you is, hey, you know, when you get your shot, like this is a great audition for you potentially here for the long term or, you know, your opportunity to be our guy when you've got an older guy in front of you. So I promise you that was the conversation. This is now coming to real life and he's got that opportunity in front of him and we'll see what they do with it. And then that's the only thing that makes me think maybe Sean Payton will be like, all right, I've got a different quarterback that I need to work to his strengths because Sean Payton does a tremendous job playing to the strengths of his players. So maybe he does start to incorporate more downfield throws because of Winston's arm strength and willingness to do so. And he's okay if some of those downfield throws end up turning into interceptions. You know, he understands what he's getting himself into if he chooses to go that route. So, but there's no doubt this is an audition, I think, for the future in New Orleans, regardless of what the Saints say about Taysom Hill. Like to me, he's
what is
more,
that, by the way. Just name Jameis Winston the starter. Everyone knows he's going to be the starter. Stop it, Sean.
Yeah, he went into his backups. Like, what do you expect? And the thing is like, well, it's like maybe because they're trying to justify what they paid Taysom Hill. The reality is this. He takes up multiple roster spots. So you can justify it because he basically takes up three guys' jobs. He's he's an emergency quarterback. He's a third string running back, wildcat, whatever you want to call it. Wide receiver, tight end. He plays on special teams. He's on kickoff as R4. He's the PP and punt. Like he does all that and you get that all in one player. That's a high price to pay because there's no one else in the league last time I checked doing that. So you don't need to justify the fact that he could be the future at quarterback. Just say, look, we like all the different hats and roles he wears. He's a great piece within our locker room. We feel like the way we utilize him is unique. So we're going to pay him a lot of money. And he might not be our future quarterback. Like we might be Jameis Winston or maybe a draft pick, but. This is an audition for Jameis Winston and the future, there's no doubt.
That's why if you're a podcaster and you do video and you write, you demand the big bucks, the Taysom Hill bucks, baby. All right, coming up after the break. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Are you referring to yourself there?
No, Ryan Wilson. Coming up after the break.
I love how we get Ryan in his positions where he can't defend himself. Yeah. But I will say this, no one works harder than Ryan Wilson because he had to come out with like a 2022 mock draft. We haven't even had 2021 yet. Think about the pressure they put on that man.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, is Kyler Murray in the MVP race? Can the Cardinals make a run? And who are the sleeping giants in the AFC East?
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing.
Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
All right, so we're going to look at possible playoff sleepers, playoff projections. We're sort of taking our playoff projections courtesy of Stephen O. of Sportsline.com and examining. We're going to take a deeper dive into two teams, one from each conference. We'll start with the NFC. So the Saints are the current one seed, right? Isn't that right? The Saints are the current one seed.
Correct.
My NFL Jesus standings. The NFL, you know, NFL, you know about NFL Jesus? NFL Jesus? Game Stats Information System? GSIS? Jesus? Nope. Okay. Don't care about it. The Packers are the current number one seed, actually. The Saints are the number two seed.
Okay.
Do you think Green Bay ends up winning, getting that top seed?
Yes, because their division is, I don't know, the Saints have already beat the toughest part of their division, but they still, again. The
Saints also don't have Drew Brees. So.
Right, and they still have to play the Falcons. I think they're playing better football than people realize. I'm going to go with yes. If they're in the driver's seat now, I don't really see them stumbling the rest of the way. The Bears are only getting worse. The Vikings look better, but not really. I mean, it's hard to make that indication based off how they looked this past week versus the Bears.
Tampa at 7-3 is a sleeper for it, but obviously the Saints have the tiebreaker in that division. So
right, so that's true.
They have to steal the division to make it happen.
Right. And we saw how that worked out versus Green Bay, right? Green Bay has the tiebreaker over them. Oh, no, they don't. They lost
the Bucs have the tiebreaker over Green Bay.
Right. So I don't know. Maybe Tampa Bay is kind of the wild card and all the house will work out. It's one of those three teams, though.
Yeah, and I don't think an NFC West team is going to get it. I think they have too many games against each other. But I will say this. I am fascinated by the NFC West because, one, it feels like Seattle is – I mean, it doesn't feel like it. Seattle is slipping. Like, Seattle is falling back a little bit. Russell Wilson has to be perfect for them to win. Their defense is atrocious. And I think maybe even more important than the Seattle factor in all this, Brady, is that you see what the Rams did defensively against Seattle. They held them to 13 points, one. But two, you put Jalen Ramsey on a number one wide receiver in DK Metcalf, and you lock him down, and then you just set Aaron Donald loose on a mobile quarterback with a questionable offensive line in front of him. Does that sound like the Arizona Cardinals? It sort of does to me. So I kind of tend to think that the Rams might, and I picked
Hold on, who would be that lockdown corner and who's the edge rusher you're referring to? Chandler Jones is out for the year.
No, I'm saying that the Rams might be a terrible matchup for the Cardinals.
Oh, potentially, right? I mean, I'm trying to go back to, potentially. I mean, we'll see. Like,
do you think Ramsey can lock down Hopkins?
Yeah, but I would say the difference is I think they can spread the football around enough. And the X factor is the way they use Murray. I mean, he's going to rush for over 1,000 yards this year. You know, Russell's not rushing for over that. I mean, they have an semblance of balance between what they do with Drake and Edmonds, as well as Murray running the football. That's kind of an X factor. And on top of it, you still have Larry. You still have Kirk. You still have these other positions that kind of pitch in to that wide receiver group. So I don't know that I see it quite the same. And I also think, like, Cliff does a tremendous job of wearing down defenses, especially early in games. You've got, like, a good D tackle like that. You know what he does? He just throws wide receiver screen, wide receiver screen, wide receiver screen. Why? Because think about, like, the most effort you exert when you're a D tackle. You blow off the ball, thinking it's a pass, and then you got to change direction and run all the way out to a sideline. And then you got to come back. Now they're back at the line of scrimmage. You're doing it again. They throw it the other way. You run horizontally a bunch at the beginning of the game. They do this all the time. And it happens all the time in college. But, like, no one ever draws any conclusions to it. By the second half, these dudes are gassed, man, because they're so tired of jumping out, changing direction, running. Screen, screen, little downfield, quick pass here
tempo,
or there.
Tempo.
And so as long as Arizona can stay on the field on third down and then put together some of these fast tempo, fast paced drives, it just wears down the defense. And then that's where – you get this whole, like, time of possession versus plays faced argument where, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 50-50 time of possession. If you run at a faster pace and you're running 15, 20 plays more, that's 15 or 20 plays more Aaron Donald has to go up against.
Yeah,
for that's sure. Where they see that advantage in that sort of system.
I think plays is way more important than time of possession.
100%.
Because you can run a, you can run left. Like you can, I mean, if you're eating up the clock and waiting till 5 seconds are left.
Yeah, he's getting a breather. Like if you're waiting 35 seconds every time to call a play. That's why the whole idea, and I say this all the time, I'm like, stop. We need to stop. Oh, they're dominating the time of possession. Okay. So what, they're sitting on the ball more? I mean, they're just standing out there resting instead of sitting down the bench. Like it's not a big deal. And you're forcing those guys to line up and play fast. That's what makes it tough.
I think you can, at the end of a game, look at time of possession and say, okay, this, like you can draw a conclusion, but winning time of possession is not a beneficial,
like, no.
Doesn't do any good to win the time of possession. So who do you think, can Kyler Murray win MVP?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, the biggest question becomes, are we going to give the MVP to a playoff team and not a division winner? Because of the NFC West, as you alluded to, like we may find three teams for sure get in Seattle, LA, and Arizona. They may beat each other up. So I don't know who's going to win the division, but they're all three playoff teams in my opinion. So let's say they all get in. Like, are we okay if he goes over 4,000 yards passing, 1,000 yards rushing? I am. The problem is you've got this Patrick Mahomes guy who's now, you know, starting to kick it into gear. What, 25 touchdowns, only one interception? I mean, he's going to have a statistical case as well. And I'm not saying that they've got it easy to win the division because they've lost to the Raiders and they got to face each other again. But, you know, he's got a leg ahead as far as it's probably easier to win the AFC West than it is for Arizona to win the NFC West.
And he's also getting Andy Reid off a bye this week. It's Sunday Night Football, the Raiders, it's prime time. And there's this whole bus thing.
Yeah. Well, another thing is like, there's, you know, I do a radio show. We had a caller come on today and go, you know, the Raiders defense is so improved. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, don't give me that. It's not improved. There was terrible weather in the Cleveland game. That's why they held them to 6 points. That's why they held them low yardage. Don't use that as an example. You know, this past week's game, Denver turned the football over four times. And it was more probably on Drew Lock and the Denver offense than it was really anything that the Raiders defense did. Right. And his whole point was like, well, they've really gotten better since that Kansas, you know, that's starting that Kansas City game. I was like, dude, they gave up 32 points, like over 400 yards in every game. Like this defense has not proved that it can consistently get pressure, turn the football over, or stop anyone unless there happens to be a 25 plus mile an hour gale force wind with a bit of some rain and some cold weather. And last time I checked, that is not what Mark Davis had installed at Allegiant Stadium. So it's definitely not happening at home. And it's probably not happening somewhere in the AFC West. So, I think this time around, KC will have a much better game plan, as you alluded to, for that Raider defense.
Chiefs and, Raiders is off the board in some spots because of the COVID issues with the Chiefs offensive tackles. I think I saw a report that all tests, came back negative. I would encourage everyone listening to this to go bet on the Chiefs. They're -6.5. It feels a little trappy because it's in Oakland in prime time. And that's a big
deal. It's in Las Vegas. They don't play those games.
Look, I'll get it right in 2021. Don't worry about it. I finally gotten the Chargers down. But you know what? It's Andy Reid off a bye. And they're mad about this bus thing, which is hilarious that how mad John Gruden is that they're mad about the bus thing. You saw this, right?
No.
Okay. So Andy Reid is asked about, you know, it's like something questions about the Raiders, and his response is like, "Well, I mean, it is." Or it's like, you know, it's like, is it easier to bounce back after a loss? Something like, and he's like, "Well, you know, you'd have to ask them. We don't really know." He's like, and they took a trip around the stadium, a victory lap around the stadium in the bus. Apparently, the Raiders team bus leaving Kansas City after winning. Did like a victory lap honking around Arrowhead Stadium. And I don't know the specifics of it. So Andy Reid mentions it. He mentions it twice in his press conference. Like he clearly brought it up annoyed by the fact that it happened, which noteworthy if Andy Reid says that, I think a little bit. John Gruden is asked about it. And Gruden says he makes this disgusted face over it. I think Will is PR guy. Like, are you kidding me? These guys are asking me this. And he's like, well, maybe you just have to go ask smart aleck Kansas City bus driver who had some things to say, and we made him drive around the stadium. Next question. This is ridiculous. And it's like, whoa, buddy. Like, you did a victory lap around the stadium. People want to know, man.
No, no. You know, here's the thing is you contract services when you get there to, on the site, right?
I'm sure the bus driver is a Chiefs fan.
Right. And that's the whole point. So like, could there have
been something like, about time you beat us.
Like, right. Or something could have been said, of course. And so what do you do in that position? You flex. Absolutely. You're like, hey, we got to make a detour real quick. Do you mind just circling around a few more times? And since we're paying you, just keep honking the horn. Okay. As we drive around a few more times. So I wouldn't put that past John Gruden or anyone else. Like I've been plenty of situations where we've had some bad bus drivers or bus drivers from, you know, different teams. I remember one time we were going through like the security gate because, you know, you always charter a plane. Yeah. And so you go in through the separate entrance and our security, it was late at night. Our security bus, our bus driver, he hit the side of a fence. It shattered a windshield.
Oh my God.
And so at that point, because of liability, like even though they could have kept driving, you know, onto the rest of the tarmac to let us, you know, get out, get our stuff, they had to stop the bus right there. And so we had to wait till another bus unloaded, get everyone off, make sure there's no like shattered glass on anyone or anything else. But I mean, it was just a whole ordeal, but that's just one of many things that happens when you're on the road and you have to deal with bus drivers.
You don't have like some professional, like Chiefs bus driver. You're just using
Travel bus drivers, man. Like the bus drivers that like you, they're the ones that are taking your team from your facility to the airport, unless you're a team that gets to park at the airport, which I was not one of those players, unfortunately. I wish I had the opportunity to do that. I was not.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, that I would encourage people to take the Chiefs -6.5. I think that they are going to.
It's going to be big. I like it.
I think they're going to put a number on Gruden.
They will. They're going to put a Brinson on him. That's all I like to say.
Is that like a?
It's a thing. Yeah, it's a thing. It's like a Munson, but a Brinson. You know, if you've ever seen.
Whoa! Is that what? A kingpin? Kingpin?
Well, no, it's just an example of like not. They're not synonymous, but like there's a Munson, there's a Brinson, there's all sorts of things. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we can't tell anybody what that actually means. All right. So moving along to or staying in the AFC, I guess. Chiefs are in. Chiefs are good.
Yeah.
Who do you think gets the number one seed? The Chiefs or the Steelers?
I don't know. I keep thinking, I mean, I picked the Steelers to win the Super Bowl. I guess I'll have to stick with it, even though I think that the Chiefs would beat him if they played. So
are you one of those people? I saw, I think it was Chris Raybon of the Action Network, I think, who's like, he like wrote an article. He's like, I bet the Steelers to win the Super Bowl. And I feel less confident now that they're undefeated, like now than I did before somehow.
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's not even that I feel undefeated. It's like how they've got there being undefeated. I'm like, like maybe Big Ben should just not practice all week because he looked probably one of his better games after being on the COVID list. So let's just call that.
Would you almost prefer if the Steelers were 7-2?
Kind of, you know, like I don't know, there's something about experiencing a loss, learning how to lose, coming back from that sort of thing. And then having that taste in your mouth. I mean, not that again, like I was ever on a team that was good enough to experience that necessarily, but yeah, I think there's something to that, like not being devastated, but I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter.
Maybe they have the Jaguars on the road, Ravens at home, Washington at home, Bills on the road, Bengals on the road, Colts at home, and Browns on the road.
I mean, Browns, Colts, Ravens. Like those
Ben
are
doesn't lose to the Browns. He does it. Like he dislikes the Browns for passing on him in the draft and he just doesn't lose to them.
I mean, we beat him on Thursday Night Football when I was there.
Is that in Pittsburgh or in?
Made in Cleveland.
Yeah.
2009.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay. Usually
it was like -10 degrees. It was awful.
Oh, that was the game where you guys combined for like 45 yards passing.
Pretty much. Yeah. It wasn't much. And there was like a 30-mile-an-hour winds the whole time. You basically could only throw, I think it was toward our team tunnel. Yeah. Cause the way the wind, no, it was the other way. It was away from our team towards the dog pound. It was like the only direction you could throw. The other way, it was like good luck because the way that the wind was piping through there.
So let me ask you that about the Browns real quickly. And I'm not to divert because we were going to get to the Dolphins in a second, but, the last 2 weeks in Cleveland, the wind gusts have been really bad. The weather has been awful. You referenced the Raiders game where there'd be like, oh, the Raiders defense is good. No, it's the wind situation in Cleveland specifically to that stadium is worse than a lot of other spots or that city, I guess. And then a lot of other spots in the NFL, like in Lambeau, I feel like it runs like almost directionally. So if you're on one side of the field, passing is fine. But in Cleveland, it's like going every which way, right?
It could change. I mean, Phil Dawson, Nasi, he was a longtime kicker there. One of the best that I would talk to before the game about it. He could tell you better than anyone else. But Yeah, it typically comes through in kind of a weird way because the design of the stadium, but it's also right there off Lake Erie.
Yeah.
It's very rare. I mean, outside of, you know, Soldier Field, which kind of has more of a bowl shape. So it's a little bit more of swirling. Cleveland's not shaped like that necessarily because the way the end zones are. So you get it kind of coming in one direction more so than the other. San Francisco, or in Santa Clara, I should say, you notice it like that too. Green Bay is not bad. And in part because it's been built up so much. I mean, it really is impressive when you're in there. So that doesn't bother you too much. Buffalo is the other one that I think has a decent amount of consistent win, based on the design of the stadium and how it works. So, just from what I can kind of remember back to, like thinking about different stages of win. Cincinnati was kind of one weird too, right there off the Ohio River, and just the way that stadium design was. I'll never forget. It had a crosswind and we were there. It was kind of like probably, you know, 40-ish maybe. And we're all warming up before the game. And it was just like, you could basically throw to the right, but you couldn't throw to the left. And it was like that significant. So you really had to pick and choose your formations and then like how you went about disguising how you're going about just throwing one direction.
So that's where Mitchell Trubisky should have played, right? It's like, it's where he could only throw to the right side of the field. So, sure. I mean, but in the Cleveland thing, cause it looks like, it just seems like we've had two games now, the last 2 weeks where there's been a ton of wind, no points scored. Does it seem fair to say that if you've got a game in Cleveland with wind at like 15 miles an hour or higher with a Kevin Stefanski team that likes to run it, it should probably take the under.
Under. I mean,
yeah, that's sort of what I'm getting at here. Like,
yeah, kicking game, it's going to affect punting game, field position battle, all that. So yeah, you know, definitely take the under.
Like Houston couldn't do anything last week either with my, and like, they, and, you know, and you just saw it, the Browns just, so yeah, I guess that's my point is take the under on Cleveland games. Okay. To the Dolphins. I'm just going to skip through the number one pick and all that stuff. The number one seed and all that stuff. The Dolphins, where are you at on the Dolphins in terms of what you've seen from Brian Flores?
I'm a believer, man. I'm a believer. Like I think the way the culture he's built, the players that he kept on this team, the players that he added on to this team, if you look between last year and this year, he's just got everything working in unison with one another. And these guys, they all know their roles. They all execute at a high level. Like it's in essence, it's kind of like New England-ish. Like they don't beat themselves. They all execute what they're asked to do at a high level. And they really play complementary football all three phases. You know, we've seen special teams touchdowns, you know, block punts. You know, you look at their defense. Their defense has scored points. Their defense is pitching, you know, low scoring games to be able to help out their offense. And offensively, it's like, it doesn't matter who's back there. It could be Miles Gaskin. They just released Jordan Howard because they keep finding guys from the University of Washington. Savon Ahmed now has been their featured rusher. Like they just looked at the University of Washington. They're like, yeah, we like that guy. We like that guy. We like the Newton guy who's there now. We'll just get him next year. And then Tua, the way they've worked in Tua and how he spreads the football around. Jakeem Grant's taken on a bigger role outside of just being a returner. Now with Isaiah Ford gone, he's taken over that slot position. So they're just a really good football team. They're 6-3. They won 5 in a row. You couldn't say that about the Dolphins since 2016 when Gase was there in his first year, unless you include the bye. And 2008 would be the last time if they didn't have a bye during that 5-game winning stretch.
The famous Cam Cameron. Is it Cam Cameron?
No, that was the year before.
Who was the
2008? They went 1-5. They can't win 5 in a row if they went 1-15.
Sorry. I'm saying that they won the division. Was it Cam Cameron 1 year, then he got fired, then Sperano in 08? Is that right?
Cam Cameron got fired after going 1-15. He's gone.
Yeah.
Sperano came in. Chad Pennington comes down. They win the division. They go 11-5 that year. And they won, that was the last time they won 5 in a row, not having a bye at some point in time there.
Chad Pennington, famous June 26th birthday guy.
Yeah.
Just like me.
Yeah. That's called a Brinson, by the way, what you just did.
Mike Vick, Derek Jeter, Chris O'Donnell.
Wow.
Chad Pennington.
Solid list.
Will Brinson.
Chris O'Donnell.
As in like Robin Chris O'Donnell.
I was just going to say, literally, that was my first recall. It was like Batman Robin. Yeah. It was Robin.
Terrible movie. But no, was Batman Robin good? Batman Forever was good.
I think so. No, all the ones with Christian Bale were great. I would say that was probably one of the better ones with Robin because I can't remember another Batman and Robin with an actual Robin.
There's Batman, there's the Tim Burton Batman with Michael Keaton, which is awesome. Right.
Yeah, Michael Keaton, that outside of Multiplicity, which is one of my favorite movies, he was actually one of the more low-key better Batmans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Bale is probably the best. Pim went flying. Bale is probably the best ever, but I think Keaton, I might take Keaton.
I'm with over Clooney.
Yeah, Clooney was terrible.
Clooney's just not believable. Like, I mean, I could see like Michael Keaton on some HGH for a while actually like being Batman. I just could never picture George Clooney and I don't know.
Okay, so that's what it was. So, all right, I mixed up. Batman and Robin is the Clooney one that was awful. That was a terrible.
Besides for Chris O'Donnell.
But remember, was Chris O'Donnell, was he Batman? I thought he was Robin and Batman Forever. Or is there not a Robin and Batman Forever?
I don't think there's a Robin and Batman Forever.
I think you're right. But Batman and Robin was famous. It came out in 97. Famous because they made a huge deal, or like it was a huge deal, it was made out of Batman's nipples. Remember that? They added nipples to the Batman suit for the first time.
That would not be something that I would really.
They made a huge deal out of it in 97. Everybody's like, why'd they add nipples to the bat suit?
Well, don't get me started on like, I mean, I feel like you're venturing into the talk of like mannequins now. I was just walking by a mannequin the other day and it was like it was swimsuit wear. And
I see this picture of Batman's nipples right now.
Well, but I'm just saying in general, like, they put like nipples on like mannequins for like bathing suits. I'm like, have they always done this? Have they always made it like for like female bathing suits? And like, you can either see other stuff, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's like very revealing. I was like, are these bathing suits that revealing? Even mannequins are showing stuff.
It's pretty bad. And by the way, George Clooney, I didn't realize this, later in 2015, apologized for Batman and Robin. He said, quote, I thought I destroyed the franchise.
Wow. Yeah. All because of a nipple slip.
Yep. They gave old Robin nipples too. It's just unnecessary.
Oh, I just got the picture. I'm looking at it now. Wow. I mean, and honestly, they look kind of like they're like bolts. Like it's a chest plate and they bolted the chest plate, but yeah, clearly they're nipples.
Okay. I had gotten all mixed up here. I've got my Batman's crossed up. Batman Forever is good. Batman Forever had Seal, Kiss from a Rose. Great song.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin was the one where they brought in Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
That's right.
And then it's like the Iceman Comet. He's like, you know, he had like all these bad puns. It was terrible. And then they had Alicia Silverstone. Uma Thurman was Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
And Alicia Silverstone, was, Batgirl?
Yeah. No, she was, Catwoman, maybe? I don't know. Batgirl?
She was good. I think she was Batgirl.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. That was peak. Anyway, Alicia Silverstone, peak of her powers. And boy, she fell.
Oh, by the way, just to like completely get back to the conversation we're having, because I have to go. The Dolphins.
Yes.
They're going to get to 9-3, dude. Like, look at their next three games. If I'm not mistaken, it's what? Like, they've got Cincinnati on there.
Broncos on the road next. Jets on the road after that. Bengals at home. And then the Chiefs.
Yeah, but let's talk about those three. If you would have asked me, like, week 4 or 5 of the season, would you have picked them to say, no, they're going to be favored in all those three of those games?
No.
But, like, now they are. Like, they are legitimately going to be favored in those three games, I think, at least.
They'll be double-digit favorites against the Jets and Bengals.
I don't know about that. Definitely not.
They will definitely be double-digit favorites against the Jets.
I could see them being, like, a 9.5. It's a divisional opponent. I don't think they'll go that high.
Okay. I'll take the Dolphins. Absolutely.
All right. I'm just saying. But still, it doesn't distract the point. They could be 9-3 going into that Kansas City game. How about that, man? Like, I would have never foreseen that happening this year.
No. That would be insane. And then they close out with the Patriots at home, Dolphins on the road, and Bills on the road. So are they definitely making the playoffs?
Oh, I think they're going to make it. I mean, they get the 9 wins, dude. Yeah, I think they're in. Because I think they'll find a way of stealing one of those games, right? Whether it's maybe New England or Buffalo. Like, I don't foresee them being Kansas City. I could be wrong. But I think they can get to 10 wins, man. I think they can get to 10-6 legitimately.
Dolphins plus 3-1 to win the division. Bills minus 333. Pats 12-1.
Yeah, wait, look at the rest of the Bills schedule quickly. Only because if they were to beat New England, because they finished it in Buffalo, you said?
Yep.
So they could be 10-5 going
Bills
into that.
Bills have the Chargers, Niners, Steelers, and Broncos. And then Pats, Dolphins, and Pats and Dolphins.
Yeah, they got an easier schedule. No.
They're going to win 4 of those games, I think. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to ask yourself, like, all right, if it came down to it, if the Dolphins are 10-5, do they beat Buffalo? Is it in Buffalo?
It's in Buffalo.
Yeah. Do they beat Buffalo? I don't know. I'm probably thinking not.
Yeah.
Probably. So they probably end up 10-6, but okay. They could legitimately be 10-6. I mean, that's assuming they beat New England, which is no gimme. So
sure. Either way, these two teams are fascinating in the AFC East. Things have changed dramatically in that division. And as Brady points out, the Dolphins are for real. Please, Dolphins bloggers, Miami Dolphins fans, the snakes coming out of the swamp to attack me. See, Brady thinks they're good. I agree. They're pretty good. Brady, we ran long. My apologies. But thank you for the Batman nipple talk.
That's what we're here for. If we've learned one thing today, it's that you never, ever, all right, put nipples on a Batman costume.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.